Hi, and welcome to Menstrual Cycle Mastery with me, your host, Lisa DeYoung. I'm an educator, coach, and group facilitator passionate about exploring the menstrual cycle and the experience of pain or suffering many of us have. Using a mind-body approach and the menstrual cycle mastery skills, I support individuals to reconnect with their cycle and find relief, and I train professionals who want to guide others in this work. Freedom from suffering is possible for you, and there's so much more waiting for you on the other side. Let's dive in. Hello, everyone, and you're very welcome back. Today, I have Menstrual Coach Academy graduate with me, Brianna Viejas. Is that pronounced correctly this time, Brianna?
Yeah.
great. You're very welcome. So Brianna was a graduate in the Menstrual Coach Academy in, was it 2024 you finished up? I think 2023.
I was trying to figure that out. I think it was 2022 to 23.
Oh, really? Okay.
I think so. Yeah. Yes. I think it's been a little bit longer. Yeah.
Yeah. You were the second cohort I had. That's right. So this is going to be an interesting conversation, and I'm excited to speak with you, Brianna, and catch up with you all about the work you're doing now and your journey on the course, etc. But before we get into the juicy details, would you introduce yourself to the audience, who you are, where you're based, and maybe also a little cycle check-in, and I can share mine as well.
Yeah, of course. So my name is Brianna Viejas. I am a wife, a mom of three. I got into the menstrual health industry and space through my own personal journey with PMDD and just looking for more sustainable answers than I could find at the time. I was diagnosed in 2016. So it was kind of before the boom of resources and even conversations online. And yeah, so it's just been a very interesting, like kind of windy process in my own journey, and then how to bring that work into the space, like in my own way. So I am a menstrual cycle coach. That's the label that I'm still working under. I feel like I often go through moments where I'm like, I don't know if that captures what I do, but I also don't know if I have a better thing yet to go under, but you know, I still fall like within that. Yeah. So I'm excited to talk a little bit more about that emergent process for me and where I fall in that niche. And then as far as the cycle check-in, I am in my kind of inner spring. So feeling light and, you know, some positive energy flowing and creativity flowing. So that's all good.
Oh, it's great to hear you, Brianna. I love hearing your background again and your cycle check-in. Thank you for sharing that. I am on like day five, I think, and 4 or 5. And I was just telling Brianna there before we got started that I had quite a flat first few days in my inner spring, which happens sometimes, doesn't it? When we're, when we either don't rest enough or push ourselves too much. And I know I teach this work, but I'm still very much a student myself and make those mistakes. And it's all good. And it can be hard as well, I find, when we're transitioning to a new season, in the outer world as well, because I'm not getting that same hit of energy from like the sunshine and the warm weather and, you know, going into the sea or whatever things we do in the summer. It's autumn here in Ireland. So yeah, I'm just kind of navigating a lot of change right now, but I feel better now. It was a flat day yesterday and I was able to catch it and it's all good now. So there we are.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the work, right? It's how are you relating to yourself in those moments? Because also life happens. Like for me, when I was on my cycle, or it was the weekend, but also like I'm a mom, so the weekends are busy with the kids and things. So like I know that if that's when my first days of my cycle are, I have to build in the slow entry back into my work week and stuff, because I can't honor my pace as well, you know, with the young kids and stuff. And so I think it's the awareness there, and also, yeah, releasing perfectionism has been a big part of the process for me, of like knowing what's best or ideal and navigating that tension between that and like, okay, but what's available to me in this moment? And, you know, how do I work with what I have essentially?
That's beautiful, Brianna. It sounds like you are able to be with a lot of presence a lot more than maybe before you were diagnosed. Am I hearing that right? Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
And it caught my attention as well. Like were you diagnosed formally by a doctor?
No, I didn't go through the formal diagnosis at the time. When I found PMDD through the Google rabbit holes, I always say, like, when you're on like page two or three of Google search, like, things are not good. That's when you know there's
That's
a
the flag.
problem. And I ended up finding a blog that wasn't even still posting, like it had been closed, but that there were some posts around PMDD. And when I read it, I immediately knew, because it was a, that search was really coming from, I was starting to put together like there's something cyclical about this. And it was actually when I was studying abroad, and it kind of like hit its peak of like how bad it was. And I think because I was in a different country, there was more isolation from my community and stuff. And so I think the pattern really was heightened and emerged. And then I went through all the searching of the terms and the diagnostic criteria and like all of those things, and just reading all the stories at the time of people trying to get a formal diagnosis and then what the responses were. So basically, what I found of like what the process is at that time, I was like, I don't have capacity to really advocate for myself right now. And so like I really see that as like my first act of like self-trust in the process of just knowing like this 100% explains the experience that I've had. And my cycle itself was very regular, very consistent. So it wasn't like I was also mixing in like, erratic cycles and these other symptoms that I was trying to fit. It was very much the emotional cycle that was the loudest. So it really just, for the first time, was like, oh, this is what I'm experiencing. So it felt very like clear cut for me. So I didn't feel the need to necessarily go through that whole process, which has then been interesting at various points of like almost imposter syndrome around that, of like, okay, well, then was I making it up because things are a little bit better? And, and with the, I think there's a big part of PMDD where, as a nervous system coping mechanism, you can kind of black out a lot of those experiences. And so when you're not in it, it can feel like sometimes hard to access. And so that has kind of been a part of that. But no, I definitely was like, no, I check all the boxes.
Yeah, I hear you. Wow, that's such a thank you for sharing that insight and your own anecdotes around that, and then your kind of awareness in retrospect around that too. Because, like, PMDD, premenstrual dysphoric disorder, is not a it's not a thing you get diagnosed with a blood test. It's a syndrome, right? So, like you're saying, it's a collection of symptoms that will present differently for different people. And so I suppose, I don't know, because I like haven't had the personal experience either with the medical system in relation to PMDD, but I imagine that like it's going to be different depending on even what medical provider you're working with, you know? So I love that you were able to identify with it, not as it, right? With it. And as well, I love that you're able to see, oh yeah, like I have this, is a thing that I like to term as cycle amnesia, which we talk about in the course, right? Where you kind of dismiss your own experience because you're in a different place in your cycle. Or we kind of maybe not even dismiss, sometimes we disregard and think, oh, sure, it's fine, I'll get through it. But it sounds like you were able to move through that and then see, like, no, actually, I'm going to own this as a diagnosis for myself. And did that then help you when you were, when you gave yourself permission to identify with PMDD or having it at that time?
Yeah, I think having the language for it was very helpful and something that then gave me space to kind of understand better what my experience was. I think for me, having the language for things has always been really helpful just to connect the dots. And then it was also helpful in like interpersonal relationships as well to kind of give a little bit of structure to what was happening and give them a way to kind of have a better understanding of what I was experiencing internally, and then with that, and then how it presented on the outside, because I think that's something that often is a blurry line with PMDD, because even like a lot of criteria lists or like quizzes or things that I've seen, they really focus on like how does this present outwardly? So it's like, depression, anxiety, if there's suicidal ideation, like these things that can be observed, but it doesn't always capture like how does this feel internally. And I think that is significant because it is comorbid with a lot of, clinical depression, clinical anxiety, with neurodivergence, with all of these other things. So kind of understanding like what piece of this is hormones, what piece of this is PMDD, and how that fits into like the whole scope of your experience. I think having that language and being able to connect to like the internal experience of it was really helpful and has definitely like informed the work that I do and how I talk about it.
Got you. Yeah, I hear you. Okay. It sounds like you have a much more nuanced, both lived experience and understanding, and then your practice as well, working with people is very nuanced, which I love. And then, okay. So what happened then, Brianna, when you were diagnosed, and did you go on the journey of reading all the books and doing all the things? Like, what happened then?
Yeah.
Curious.
Reading all the books, doing all the things. I started actually with, I was listening to a podcast that where someone mentioned like a woman who is doing like hormone work, like in her coaching, but her focus was PCOS. But I was just like, that's the only
It'll
person
do.
that I've heard of or know of that's like in the cycle and hormone. So I worked with her a little bit, and it's just funny now to think about that because like her work was so different. Like PCOS is a much more like physical hormone balance, like, physical body experience. So PMDD is like the opposite end of the spectrum of that. But it did start that journey of like understanding like different phases and different needs. And from there, it was like reading In the Flow by Elisa Viti and, kind of going down that path. So I definitely entered the space more from, I think, like a more Western perspective of like biohacking and cycle syncing, which I think also met where I was at the time. Like that's the types of answers I was looking for. And that was very helpful in terms of just getting back a little bit of a sense of control of my experience and feeling less of a like victim of PMDD, because that was very much like the inner kind of dialogue was like, this is happening to me, like my body hates me, like this, and developing a real like disassociation from my physical body. So I think that really brought me back into like, okay, what does my physical body need? And that helped to create some additional capacity that then allowed space to do the deeper work because my body wasn't screaming so much. And I think that's a big part and a big theme in my work is like, how can we like quiet the noise so that we can like actually hear what our body's trying to tell us? And that often starts with physical things. And I kind of think of that as like, that's the triage. The triage is like, how do we calm the body down enough to see, what it's really needing from
I
us.
love that approach. That's probably what I do as well, like personally every day is, and then my work as well. Like sometimes, and I know you're talking more detail here, but like sometimes it's like, oh yeah, I need to eat some food before I do the journaling. That's what I'm hearing from you. It's like, yes, sometimes we need to make sure we're balancing those blood sugar levels, we're getting the macros, their circadian rhythm is, we know how to regulate that, hydration, vitamins, all that stuff. Is that what you're talking about? Like that physical entry and then going into this sort of psychosomatic, spiritual, emotional world.
Yeah, and I think when you're first starting, like that's really where it starts because the psychosomatic, the spiritual, like this is really tied to our ability to be present in our body, our ability to trust our intuition, to interpret our body's signals. And I think for a lot of people, a lot of women in general, but then I think with PMDD in particular, from my experiences, like there's such a disconnect. Like I really felt like I was living from like the neck up. And, like everything else was like numb in a lot of ways that I didn't realize at the time. But now I'm like, yeah, I did not have a relationship with my body. And so to me, like, yeah, doing the things, because I also think that an experience that I remember having so often with PMDD is anytime I started hitting like mid-cycle, like anything that started to feel off, or if I started to feel irritated, or like I woke up more lethargic or like not as much energy, my mind would immediately be like, here we go, and kind of start this spiral of like, now I'm in it. And I think understanding that it's like we can project stories and create some of that. And it's not to say that it's in your head, but also at the same time, we can kind of lean into those feelings as like, and this is the whole story, this is the whole picture. And then that's all we see. So for me, being able to understand, like, okay, I am on day 19. I woke up a little tired. And like, let me just move through the day a little bit slower. Let me make sure I'm eating. Let me kind of take some time with this before I decide that my whole day is now a PMDD day. And you know, and that's tricky because like that's been the experience, right? So that's like immediately where our brain is gonna go of like, I've been here before. I know what this looks like. I know where this leads. But allowing for some of that like triage and that does like now I think what's people use more as like a cycle check-in, but I kind of think of it in those terms of it's like, okay, what do we need? And then we can start asking the questions of like, what's here? Versus like creating that what's here in the stories off of just like my body has some physical needs that it needs that we need to address so that we can go deeper.
Beautiful. I love the way you describe that. It's such a common thing I see as well in my work and in myself, that thing of, and I know I laugh, right? But it's only because I relate to it. And it's like, it's not a joke, obviously, because it's this is serious stuff. But the thing of waking up and feeling off and then just deciding, oh, this day is a write-off now, do you know? And the reason why, even from a scientific perspective, that isn't helpful is because that thinking triggers the sympathetic response in our nervous system. Like literally, like it's just like we're just pushing a button that's like, let's press the fight or flight on more all the time, and let's pump more adrenaline and cortisol. And it's actually just like keeping us in that loop, you know? And I see the same thing with people who have chronic pain. It's the same, like even before they get pain, they're already, you know, thinking about it and dreading it. And it's very, I'm not dismissing that because that's just a protective response based on our terrible experiences we've had. And our brain is just wired to kind of like protect and to look for patterns and then kind of try and prevent this from happening. And so when I, like, I'm sure you see this as well in yourself and in your own work, it's actually hard. It's hard to stay with peace and not having a massive like breakout of symptoms or just to stay with a slightly uncomfortable feeling or a sensation in our body that might lead to pain, but we don't know yet because it's not there, you know? So I'm just hearing a lot of learning how to really be present in your work and in the journey you've been on, and then really learning, like slowing it right down and learning how to really self-care our physical needs first and then going from there.
I think that's the work is like it's so, and that's the rewiring of our thoughts and the rewiring of our nervous system is teaching it that it's safe to be in those moments. And I think that's part of it is the safety in relationship to yourself of like, I can hold this experience. I can be with this experience. And it's not almost, yeah, that fear that like this experience will kill me. And not maybe in a physical sense. I think sometimes like it gets to that point with PMDD where it's like, this is so painful that that seems better, or those thoughts start to come in. But yeah, so I think a lot of the work is like when we keep it into the present moment, like, can you hold this moment of discomfort? Okay, and then can you hold this moment of discomfort? And I think there are some parallels there for me with like having had three kids and having non-medicated births, and like this idea of like, if you think about the amount of hours that this is going to take, you are going to spiral and you're going to, the sensations and everything are going to intensify because you're going to panic. But if it is like, can I ride this contraction? Can I be with this one and just keep showing up to each of those moments? You get there, you get through it, you move through it. And yeah, and I think that's been a big part because I think for so long, one of my main like coping strategies was like, okay, I need to plan ahead. And so that meant like in my good weeks, it's like, okay, I'm working ahead. I'm, you know, doing all of this prep. I'm setting up all of these things in preparation for the bad days to hit. And that I think was also contributing to that sort of nervous system pattern to say, okay, we always need to be on constant alert for like when it's happening, when it's coming. And so I think it's also like an interesting balance to hold of how do I set up systems to support myself, but not from a place of urgency and fear of not being able to handle the harder moments, but just like what's going to support me and set me up for that. But then also, like you said, of like, how can I actually allow myself to feel the joy that's here in this moment Because I felt that a lot of times too, where it's like anytime I was having a good day, there would be like dread would come in like very quickly of like, this is going to go away. And it in that way, PMDD would like steal those good days as well, because then now I'm like, okay, well, maybe the drop off in emotions won't feel so bad if I don't let myself get too high either, because the crash will be too intense. And so if I can try and just not be too happy enough, just try to be neutral. But yeah, in my journey, I've also realized like how much my trying to resist the depths of like the pain of PMDD also really capped my ability to experience joy and excitement. And like those also felt very dysregulating for my nervous system.
Wow, Brianna, that's such a powerful statement to make. I want to go into that a little bit more detail, but the question I wanted to ask you was around, yeah, you were saying that the tr even tracking the cycle and preparing in advance for your PMDD days, and I love that you name that was, even though that's a good thing, it can actually contribute to fear. And the word that's playing in my head there is control. We can use it to control and manage and cling. And I just love, like, as a graduate from the academy, I love your thinking again, so nuanced, because you're bringing in that critical analysis of the work we're studying. Like, we're learning menstrual cycle awareness, and we're learning cycle syncing, and we're learning tracking, but we're also holding it up and being like, yeah, well, when is this not helpful, or what are the downsides to this, or how can a client our clients like use this against themselves, and it's not the be all and end all. And I love that, like, you get an A plus because I'm encouraging that critical thinking, that we're like looking at all the things we're learning in the academy and being like, yeah, these are the cons and these are the pros and these are things to look out for. And you saw that in yourself, and I'm sure you're seeing it now in your own groups, is that, yeah, when people are suffering with PMDD or endometriosis and then they finally get help, which is through something like menstrual cycle awareness, but it's laced with fear and anxiety, which it was for me too. Then, of course, we're gonna like sort of unconsciously, this is all unconscious, like we can use it against ourselves. And it's just a pattern to be aware of, and if you are a facilitator or a coach who's listening to this, your job is to like observe your client on their awareness journey, and that they will go through that journey themselves of like, cycle awareness is a brilliant tool, and then they start living with it. But then there might come a point where, I love that you also explain this, like you surrendered, you let go of all the tools, and you started to come into a more intuitive somatic trust in yourself, where you were able to like be in a gentle relationship with cycle tracking, and but it not be this kind of clinging energy. That's what I'm hearing from you.
Yeah, because I've really gone from when I first started, I was like tracking every single thing. And I was coming out of, at the time when I found about PMDD and like cycle syncing, I was still in grad school. So I was very much in this like data collection mode. And it definitely like served, like you're saying, it served at the beginning. It brought so much relief and clarity of like, one, this isn't normal. This isn't what everyone's dealing with and just coping better than me, and kind of taking that piece out of it. But also, like, I do know so much more about my body and what's going to happen. And that like I felt so much more prepared. Yeah, it was definitely, there was that element of control there. And as I moved through that, it started to no longer be the supportive preparedness. It became like, if I can control everything outside of me, then I will be okay. So that was very much like, okay, I can only say yes or no to something if I'm in on the right days of, my cycle. I can't participate in things if it's on this day because I know that's going to be a bad day. And like, coming to this place of really every experience being filtered through, does PMDD allow me to do this or not? And that, and like initially that felt good for my nervous system because, like you said, it's like, okay, I feel in control. But obviously, that's control is an illusion that, we all have in our own ways. So yeah, really like having to take a step back from that and base it more on like, okay, just how do I feel today? And how do I move through that and not worry so much of like where it fell in my cycle? Because it's like I already got the validation that I needed and the confirmation of like, yes, this is very cyclical. It's, every time post ovulation, like I go into this 2 week window. The data already showed me that. And then it became like, okay, now how do I relate to myself in these different versions and having to pull back, from that, the preparing, because it was like you were saying before with your nervous system, like it was literally telling my nervous system to find evidence of the pain, essentially. And not that it had to look hard, like it was there at the time, but that orientation also kind of gives you tunnel vision and doesn't allow you to kind of experience like the positive that's also there.
Oh yeah, totally. And we did a podcast on that recently. I can't remember exactly the title, but the vulnerability around feeling positive emotions. There's a lot of vulnerability and joy because it's so fleeting, and gosh, it's so precious and tender and like letting that in, letting in love or letting in gratitude and like, actually feeling them is hard.
Yeah, and it's scary.
No wonder our nervous system is freaking out, because if you're a highly sensitive person, which most people in our world are, right? So your feelings are going to be big, and a lot of us also were not taught to embrace them, or we weren't raised with the tools and the skills, and then also the majority of us didn't have any encouragement around our menstrual cycle. So of course the whole thing is all numbed out and compressed and everything. And so this work that we're doing, it just sounds like a lot of like relational work, a lot of creating safety, a lot of creating spaciousness, a lot of presence. I also had the image of like a bicycle, and I don't know, how I can't remember how old your kids are. Are they riding bikes yet?
Yeah, they're still all in like training wheels
Okay, is this, yeah, do you call this
because
the similar
especially
to
my
training
oldest
wheels?
has a lot of fear around,
My gosh.
yeah, like the falling and the loss of control. Like he's got a tight grip on that.
How old is he?
He's 7 and a half,
Oh my gosh.
but he's definitely my most like sensitive and like, yeah, he's my most sensitive kid. So,
Oh, bless. We call them stabilizers. What do you call them in the States?
oh, training
Training.
wheels.
Okay, training wheel. We say stable. I don't know if it's just in Ireland, but maybe in the UK too. Stabilizers. But yeah, you take those off after a while. And it's the same with this work, like it serves a purpose having all the tools and the skills. No, sorry, having the tools and the data and the tracking and all that. But like for some of us, not everyone, because we all learn differently, but you and me, right? It can get rigid. Yeah, we like to learn, right? Okay. And then after a while, you do feel you no longer need that, or you're in a program where you have a coach who's able to kind of encourage you to take off the training wheels or the stabilizers. And I love that you are in that place now, Brianna, like for yourself, and that now you're able to guide other people there. So where are you at now with your own relationship with PMDD? And because now it's no longer tools, but rather skills is how I like to explain it to people.
Yeah, so now I consider myself PMDD free, and I think you had a conversation with the Adriana about PMDD too, and kind of that like dance around like using the word cure doesn't feel appropriate. And I think just because it is such a medical term and to apply that doesn't feel like it necessarily fits in the context or could be misleading in some way. But PMDD free for me really stems from this place of like now PMDD like isn't a filter anymore. Like I'm not moving through my day and through my life like, okay, but what about this day or what about that day or like will I be able to handle it? I am a highly sensitive person. I do have big emotions. I still have ups and downs, but it's more about like my trust in myself and knowing that like even if I have a hard day, like I have the capacity to hold that, to move through it, to feel it without it crushing me. But also, I think it's been a part of developing the skills of like having flexible boundaries where I can plan something and when the day comes, like I can also cancel. I can change my plans. I can go through with something like because maybe like a conversation like this is something that even if it was like maybe a harder day, like I know I can show up to this one because it's something I want to do. I also know that you can hold space in a way where like I don't have to show up in a performative way to exist in this space. And if it's on a harder day, it might just be like, I'm going to show up for this, knowing it's going to take more energy than it might on a different day. And I know how to build it in the recovery and the self-care to allow myself to show up for the things that I want to. And so it becomes much more of, instead of this rigid plan, it becomes much more of a negotiation where I'm checking in with my body of like, do you have the energy for this? And also like, okay, what would help you have the energy for this? So sometimes, like in my current schedule, I have like 2 or 3 days that I'm with my youngest son at home and the other days that I'm working. And so sometimes I build in some like an extra hour of work or something after he's in bed to kind of just balance the things out. And sometimes I go into that like pretty tired from bedtime routine and all the things. And instead of it coming from a place of like, you have to work and you just, there's no options, there is space to say, like, okay, if I really need to rest, I can push this. Like, what needs to get done will get done. And that's going to be fine. Also, having the negotiation where sometimes it's like, if I make you a nice cup of tea, like, are you willing to like look at this spreadsheet or, like do this thing? And sometimes that's all my body really needs is like that acknowledgement that it's had a hard day and the acknowledgement that like it's okay and the care where it's like, okay, if I cozy up in a blanket with a tea, then it's like now I'm much more open to doing another task or a small task that helps support me for the next day or the week. And that has been, I think, the biggest shift for me from going from I have all of these tools that help me manage my symptoms, which I think is really still where I was when I joined the Menstrual Coach Academy. I was still in that little bit of rigidity around, like, okay, if I do these things, then I have good months. And I think that was all valuable, but I think the program really opened up this kind of depth to the process, and that allowed me to actually build back the relationship with my body and with my phases and with just all the versions of myself where we can have that dialogue now.
Oh gosh, I love it so much. I'm like taking it all in. I'm like, oh, it's so good, Brianna. Like, because I live that life too, and I just love that for you so much that you have that like freedom to just be with yourself, and it doesn't feel like work when I'm listening to you. You just have that innate somatic connection. The like I'm not hearing it's all like rosy and it's all like self-love all the time. It's just very, there's a lot of intimacy is what I'm hearing, intimacy with yourself and like the true connection even when it's hard. And then the expectations are, well, there are not that there's expectations, it's more just that you're very present with yourself and like the awareness is so strong. And I live that life too every day, and it's like I kind of pinch myself because I'm like, holy shit, like this is so good. Like, it's not like I'm flying off having loads of holidays all the time. I'm just like in my everyday, running my business, working with my clients. And like you, I have days where I struggle with my period. No, sorry, I don't actually have many days where I struggle with my period. I get my period and then I struggle in my head around how to manage my capacity and my energy. But like you said, I have calls or I have to be somewhere. And I used to have that fear of like, oh shit, like I can't do this, this, and this because my period is coming and it's due, or like looking at my calendar months in advance and freaking out about whatever it is. And you just have to let go of all that and trust and rewire that brain and come into presence and come into self, like that internal self-care, like what, how you speak to yourself is what I'm hearing as well. There's so much kindness, and we can't like just try and approach this from a kind of like, let's fix PMDD. You're coming at it from that. Yes, you've learned the tools and now you're just like in that much softer relationship. I also love the term you used, flexible boundaries. That is like such a breath of fresh air because I'm kind of tired of hearing people talking about boundaries and these like hard, rigid boundaries, whether that's with themselves or even with others. And then we end up building walls, in the world. When actually, this is a world where we're in connection and it's messy and it's flawed and it's tender and beautiful. And you have these flexible boundaries where like you can trust yourself with your self-care, but you don't have to have all these rules, which I just think completely.
Which everything's okay. 'Cause there were times too where it's like, oh, I can't work at night. because that's bad for me, or I'm in this phase, and so that's like not good. And now it's like, this is the season of life, and it's always a check-in. Yeah, so it's just really interesting too, because before, yeah, even like pre-program and, early stages of PMDD, like I used to have people reflect back to me a lot, like how I was so good at boundaries. Like they were very impressed by that. And I thought that too. Like I was like, yeah, I am. I'm good at saying no. But what I realized later is exactly what you're saying, that actually I was really good at creating walls because I knew that I didn't have access to a no in the midst of a situation. Like I didn't know how to like be at an event and be like, okay, this is no longer, I'm tired, or this is no longer good for me, or I'm struggling. And like, I didn't know how to exit situations. And so it was very much like I say no preemptively to not be in a situation where I might feel like trapped or stuck there. And I still work with that sometimes with things where I'm trying something new because I can still have some of that. I've been playing around with like the word for it because it's like it's not quite anxiety, it's not quite dread, but it's almost like a bracing of like I don't know how this is going to go, if it's going to bring up new things, like can I handle it? So there's when these new things are coming up and I feel like I'm sort of bracing for it, I feel like now I am will work with that strategy of like, okay, if everything goes as terrible as it possibly could, like what are my exit strategies? And having those like increases my capacity so much at the thing because I know that like, okay, this little inconvenience doesn't even have to be flagged because it's like, okay, if it gets bad enough, like this is how I leave, or this is how I signal that it's time to go, or whatever it is, as opposed to feeling like, well, once I'm in it, I'm stuck there for however many hours or, whatever it is. And then every little thing that was uncomfortable or inconvenient is like, okay, but well, if this keeps going, it's again that sort of anxiety and dread of building up, like, well, if this went bad and more things go bad, and then I'm stuck here, and that just
Then
like
it's your fault
shrinks.
and you shouldn't
It
have done
shrinks
anything.
what you can hold, it shrinks what you can experience, because then that's all you see, like we talked about earlier, that tunnel vision. And so being okay having like the exit strategies, or even letting the host know, like, hey, I might slip out early and I might not have the capacity to say goodbye, but I just want to let you know. And then you just have so much permission to show up as you are instead of showing up as like this ideal version. Because I very much had that where it was like follicular me was the ideal version. And if I couldn't show up as her, if I couldn't put the mask on or whatever, then it was just a hard no. Like there was no space because I wasn't allowing that space for myself.
Oh, Brianna, wow. So much integration and building a new relationship with life itself, because, and it's the same thing I saw in myself and in my own, like people who go through physical pain, is very often we withdraw from life itself, i.e., we don't go to the concert or the party or we RSVP no to things, And that's sad because, like, life's short, and also what I've learned and what we both now know is that the way to rewire ourselves out of all of that fear is to actually build safety with saying yes to things and taking those risks, right? And building our nervous system comfort zone capacity. So going out to the concert, that's actually more powerful for your healing than, I have to be careful what I say now, but this has been my experience. But like saying yes to the thing, right, that you're scared to say to, the fun thing, like say, let's just say the concert, I think from a nervous system point of view is much more powerful than changing the diet, from my experience. I really do think that, once you have a reasonable healthy diet,
Well, and that's the thing.
powerful.
That's how I feel too, because it's like, yeah, there's a certain threshold of diet that needs to be there. And in my case, that was a lot of like when I was in PMDD and like in those stress modes, like I lost my appetite. So I would go through phases where I just wasn't eating enough. And so, of course, that then impacted my fatigue and energy levels, like, compounded. So I definitely think there's a threshold. But I've also been thinking about like just how resilient humans are. Like, we don't need the perfect optimized diet to survive. We've survived for, hundreds and thousands of years, like on less than ideal, like nutrition and things like that, right? Like of scarcity and abundance, like all of those things. And so this idea that nutrition and getting that perfect is like the holy grail of this, feels like it leans too far into that rigid of like, well, if I can control all of these factors, then I'm okay. So it feels like external in versus that internal safety where it's like, no, like I can binge some chocolate and like my body's gonna be fine. And
And could you imagine like living a life
but
where you
what's been so much more powerful for my healing is choosing to binge the chocolate. Where
same.
before it was very much like I'm numbing out, I'm checking out, I'm mindlessly doing things versus like, you know what? Like those candies look so good and I'm gonna eat them and I'm not gonna police how much I have today. And in making that choice, it just is so much more freedom. And then it's like, yeah, like I might have a stomach ache after this, or I might feel bloated, or I might get some acne. And that's okay because it was a choice I made and my body can like my body can handle that, you know? So again, it's that like that trust that you can handle a variety of life experiences. And I love that you bring up the concert example because I think it was last year, I basically did like a tour of concerts. I'd never been to a concert before. And I went to the Eras tour. I went to a Beyonce concert. I went to a Pink concert, like
Oh
over the
my
course
God.
of a year.
All the cool kids.
And it was very much like putting myself in these situations that I like never would have felt like I could handle from just like the fear of what day does this actually land on in my cycle and the fear of just like the sensory aspect of it because I am sensitive in those ways and going into these situations, but not because I've tried things in the past of like, I'm gonna like cold turkey, just like go to this thing and it hasn't felt safe and it's been too much for my nervous system. But going into these situations with like some thought of like, how, like knowing that these are real, like the sensitivities are there. And so, like, what do I have access to? And so, who do I want to go to this with? Like, going on my own is too harsh. So, like, who feels like a safe person that's going to help soothe my nervous system where I can be a little bit more present? I wore the cute outfit and then I brought socks. To like when I got to my seat, I took my shoes off and wore socks, or like, you know, just little things, and just really giving myself permission
And you booked a
that,
seat.
like, I can do whatever I want. Like, I can do whatever I need to do. And two of those concerts were great. The Beyonce concert, while amazing, was too overwhelming for my nervous system. Some of that, because it was like just the lights, and it was a lot of input. And looking back, I'm like, the group that I was with was not the safest group for me to go with. And so, just like how much capacity I had compared to the other experiences, like, was limited. So, it's just like very interesting, too, to like see those different experiences and like, you know, what can I take from those? But yeah, again, it's that relationship to yourself and giving yourself real permission to just show up in whatever capacity that you have.
I'm also hearing that you don't blame yourself then when things don't go perfectly, which is also part of it. You're not then like the next day after the concert saying to yourself, "Oh, I shouldn't have, I knew I shouldn't have gone. All of this work isn't working," which is often what happens, right?
Which was a big thing because that's then brings in the interpersonal part of it. Because my husband, who was there with me at that one, he that was sort of his takeaway of like, well, now we know that we shouldn't go to concerts. Because, and I think that's an important
He's the
piece of it of
protector.
like, he's been there the whole time. Like, we got married young, so he's been with me for like a lot of this, and he also is. Not that he's a victim, but like a victim of PMDD. And so for him, he also has a lot of these like protective things that he's having to sit with and work through of like, what can we do? What can she handle? And like, how do I also control the space so that I don't melt down, so that he doesn't, you know, have the impact of that? And like, and I mean that in a very like, not in a frivolous way, because it's a very intense experience to go through, but also to like live with. But yeah, he kind of came away from that as like, okay, we shouldn't do that again. And I was like, well, I'm coming away with a very different interpretation of that, of like, this is what I tried. And I also knew, because I ended up leaving the concert and like waiting in the car for like the second half because I was just like, okay, this is too much. But I'm like, but I knew that. I knew it was too much. And I advocated for myself and I took the space that I needed. And to me, that's equally a win as the concert that went great. And like, was it as comfortable? No. Did I love it? No. But at the same time, like, I equally held myself through that experience.
Oh
And so
my
to
God.
me, that felt like, how can I look at this and be like, that was wrong, or I shouldn't have done that, when like now I know that I can do that.
Oh, Brianna, it's so powerful. Just so much nuance in what you're sharing, and so much permission and so much grace. And just the examples of the concerts are great. Like, I know for me, I'm in this place now where it's also like a space thing in my week. So if I had two concerts in a weekend, I know that would be too much, you know? Or usually, like weekends, one social thing is kind of enough, you know? And of course, that will depend with the cycle. But yeah, it's also like the kind of the capacity within the week thing as well is something. And like the recovery, how much space do I have after? Like, you know, you kind of learn your needs, you know? Like after traveling, I really need a day to just resettle. You know, I don't like jumping straight back into work after traveling. So just having like just kind of knowing like my needs rather than giving ourselves a hard time is, and then giving yourself that permission, you know, and generosity to give yourself, because it's almost like, who am I to give myself an extra day after traveling? You just plan it in, you factor it in, like no one's going to care. So, and then I can return to work somewhat level-headed and hopefully refreshed. Because very often, you know, when you go traveling, you can be tired after, and then that defeats the purpose of the trip.
Where you're like, I need a vacation from the
Yeah,
vacation.
exactly. Yeah.
I feel like I'm wanting to call out the courage that that takes, and like, you do, in order to identify those needs, you have to put yourself in those uncomfortable situations, like the situations that stretch you. Because if you stay in what's known and what feels safe, that safety is really like what your nervous system knows. It doesn't mean that it's good. It doesn't mean that it's, feels like you're actually living life. And so having that courage to put yourself and build up to it, that wasn't my first step of like, okay, I need to trust myself. I'm going to a concert. Like, there were a lot of like baby steps that then led to me feeling like, no, I'm in a place now where like that's the next like edge of my capacity to explore and to feel into. But it does take that like that first step. And I think also like having that understanding of like, you can take as many steps to the goal. Like, if your goal is like, I'd love to be able to go to a concert, you can take as many steps as you need to get there, and build that safety and that trust.
Oh, I love it. Because we all deserve to have fun and go to the concert, or do the trip, or, you know, do the thing. Or if you're a coach or facilitator, like not have to take days off when you're feeling a little off, you know, or the fear of that, being able to show up for work. We all deserve to be in connection with life itself, you know. And I was just saying there about coaches and facilitators who are listening to this, that includes your work. You know, showing up for your clients, doing the talk on stage, you know, and not being in this constant fear that you're not going to be able to perform, like you said, you know, when actually the work we're teaching in the academy is, it's all about presence and connection. Like, if you can be in connection with yourself and be in connection with your client and be with your vulnerability, which is what the message you're giving us here today, Brianna, is like building intimacy with our vulnerability at different times in the cycle. And build and getting rid of all of that control and gripping, and you know, and then working with the fear, not getting rid of the fear, because that's also the vulnerability, but like working with the fear and softening it, and like that will usually reduce that intensity. Your capacity has just grown so much. It's incredible to listen to. I'm just conscious of time, Brianna. I could talk about this forever with
I
you,
know.
but like, you haven't even mentioned are you working with, like, what are you doing? Are you one-to-one groups? Tell us a bit
Yeah,
more.
so right now I'm focused on one-to-one. I have the idea for a group, but I feel like that's still like incubating. Yeah, so I was gonna just like kind of tie this into the work of like that idea that the point is to live life, right? The point is to have the experiences. And this, I think, was a real tension in like when I was trying to figure out like, where do I really land in this space? And some of my resistance to focusing on PMDD, even when I was in the coaching program, was that I was also coming into it like off the back of some like business marketing type stuff. And there was just this real disconnect because I feel like the right thing to do was to sort of market and package up like cycle syncing as this like biohack and the skill. And I didn't quite have the language yet to explain why that didn't feel right and why that didn't fit. And now, like looking back, I'm like, the level of nuance and depth that I wanted to hold, like I still had layers to go for myself to be able to do that. And I think the coaching program really like opened up the doors to that because there's a lot of themes that came up in the program that weren't like immediate, like aha breakthrough, my life is completely different. But it was like the seeds of things that have then, yeah, just deepened my own process. And how that's showing up in my work now is really, even recently, like rethinking the way that one-on-one offers look. Because I think, the standard of like weekly sessions or bi-weekly or, those sorts of things just like weren't clicking. Like I would have them and I'd be like, I mean, the session wasn't bad, but like something is just like not feeling right. And so what that looks like now is I'm now doing packages that are one call a month, and that call is focused on connection, context, strategy. It's like, what are we focusing on? And bringing in that support of the nervous system of having some information, having a sense of a plan, which I think is so helpful. But then the rest of the month is voice and text coaching because I was really facing this thing of like the people that I really want to help, they're having like significant portions of their month where they don't have the capacity. Like that's the whole thing is like, how do we rebuild this capacity? And I think that a call just like has some inherent prerequisites of capacity there. And not that it has to be, but we have these perceived prerequisites, right? Like of, I should be showered, I should be dressed, I should be, just to even show up. And then on the call, I think there is often a lot of pressure, which is something to work with, but can be too much initially of like, I need to perform, I need to have the right answers, or if And like the power dynamic, like if the coach or authority figure says an idea, then like I should say that's a good idea and kind of go along with it, and maybe not having the space to really process or push back. And the other component is like we talked about with the cyclical amnesia, is a lot of times those calls are happening when you're not in the moment. And so then it's almost like, I don't know if you've experienced this, of sometimes almost like excavating in the session, like trying to get to the thing, and you almost spend so much of the time trying to just identify like what it is that wants to emerge. And so this shift to voice coaching through like a text app is really like when you're in it, that's when you send the message, that's when you reach out. And it's they're still allowing for space there because it's not that I'm like, okay, now I immediately respond, but when I do come back to respond to that, we're working with that like activated element as opposed to trying to like access that or how we can like filter it and over intellectualize it when we get into a call. So it's sort of trying to work with more of that like raw experience. And also it can happen in your car, it can happen from bed, it can happen wherever you are. And what I've heard back from people as well, because I think this is kind of a new concept, especially in like personal development or healing spaces, because this is a method that I've seen in business courses where it's like a lot of text and voice noting, but some resistance of like, I really like wasn't sure about it. I thought that it's like the best is either in person or face to face, like virtual. But what I've heard back is like, this actually has been so helpful because it also gives me so much space to process. Like I can hear what you say and I can play it back as many times as I need to. I can sit with it for as long as I need to before I need to respond. And also like just in fitting in their day, because like sometimes you have a call and it's like, okay, over lunch, and then you immediately have to go back into work mode and you inherently like don't have that like time to process, where in this format it really allows people to get that, get that initial nervous system support of like, I know I have someone to talk to. I know I have somewhere to put this, and I know support is coming. And then I can also sit with that support when it works for me, come back to it. And it allows, I think, in at least in the way that I'm working, it's allowed for a lot more space to like process and do the emergent work that was so impactful for me in our program.
I love that, Brianna. You're such a great graduate to speak to because you're really doing the work. And like another thing that comes to mind listening to all of this from you is you're really deep in but both process and in reflective practice, which is something we talk about a lot in the academy. Is I love hearing about the birth of your new offer too for your clients because you're discerning things you learned in other business programs and then coming back to your work and your clients and your practice, right? Your coaching practice or your facilitation practice, and then over time letting it emerge organically from there, which is a slower build, but there's so much integrity in that and so much authenticity. And that's how you want to work, and it works well for you and your schedule and everything. And it's also really aligned with the vulnerability of your clients, what they're needing. And I love that you're getting the feedback from them too. That's in alignment as well. And that's something I'm always talking about in the academy is when we're looking at the business side of things, another conversation I could talk about for so long is, like we're building a business that is at the intersection of practice. And what I mean by practice is your practice as a facilitator, as a coach, as a therapist, as an educator, your practice is a living entity that is changing and evolving. And what's beautiful about what Brianna is talking about is she's able to like move and evolve and shift with it and be in intimacy with her practice and not force it or, give herself a hard time or, there's no perfectionism or at least you said you were working on that. It's so
Yeah,
good. I
that's
love
been a
it.
theme, and that's definitely a struggle for me. I'm a Virgo moon and rising. I don't know if you're too much into astrology stuff, but like that's like there's such a perfectionist thread there. So that's been an interesting piece in my work of like letting go and of that and being in process instead of in the perfection. Yeah, which is just it's been a journey. But I think even in the reflection, like I've had the we'll call it an advantage of having a lot of things not work out, a lot of offers, a lot of things like flop, and being able to like come back to that and be like, okay, what is so true for me? Of like, I know that this is the work that I want to bring through and that I really feel like I'm here to bring through. And then, like, where is this feedback, even if it's silence, which is the hardest feedback for me to like sit with. But like even in those, like how do I continue to come back to just how it's evolving? And I think that silence has been a big part of my journey because it's forced me to come back to like what do I want to create? What do I want to do? What do I want to bring into the world? And that really feels like what this offer has kind of like peeled back a lot of those layers of how I should do something or how people have done things before and what I've seen. To like, this really feels like this is how I want to do it. And then, yeah, getting that feedback then from others, that's really just a confirmation that it's the right direction.
I hear you. And that's the market research. That's like you're doing your business, but it's informed by your practice and then yourself, which is not like it's gorgeous because you're again in the academy. I have a Venn diagram that I use, and it's like you like personal needs, your practice needs, and then your business needs. And we're working at the intersection of all those three. Because if they're not in alignment, something's off, and then somebody pays for it, you know? We're going to link Brianna's social and website in the show notes and under the YouTube video as well. So tell us a bit about where they can find you if you're just on a walk listening to this.
Yeah, so on my website is the best place to go, especially for like the PMDD work at briannavillegas.com. I also have like a free offer that's a really good taste of this new format. So I'm calling it Willow Office Hours. So basically, I host an office hour each month in like a group chat where people can drop in questions and things that they're struggling with across the month. And then during office hours, I engage with that. So it kind of gives you that feel of like what that kind of coaching looks like and how it meets you. And then on Instagram, I'm not in a season of posting a lot right now, but that's a great way to like DM and connect with me is at Brianna Villegas Coaching.
Great, great, great. Thank you so much, Brianna. And for anyone interested in the Menstrual Coach Academy, if you're listening to this as we're publishing it in autumn 2025, there is a waitlist for the next round. We'll be starting in the summer of 2026, so you can join the waitlist. And if you're interested in joining my upcoming membership program, that is going to be called the Menstrual Cycle. What is it called again? Menstrual Mastery Collective. It's a group membership program where we're practicing the menstrual cycle mastery skills and going on this journey together. You can join us as well for the waitlist and to be the first to hear when that is open soon. Is there anything else you'd like to say, Brianna? Any words of encouragement for people listening to this?
Yeah, I think in both, whether you're someone who's experiencing PMDD or you're like a facilitator, like in the work, just really like trusting the process, trusting yourself in it, and that it is such a unique process. Because I think at the beginning, it very much felt like I wanted a formula. I wanted, like, if I do these 10 steps, then, the symptoms will go away, or then the offer will sell, or like all of those things. But yeah, just really trusting that, like, even if other people's experience looks like that you're just really trusting your process because it's there for a reason. And the things that you go through to get to the goal are all the things that really make your voice and can help other people. And it's like all the experience you need to collect almost to do the thing that you really want to be doing in the world. And so just trust it and trust the timing and yeah, have some fun and live some life while
Live
you do
some
it.
life. Get out to the concerts. Send us an invite. We want to go to concert with you.
Yes.
I love it, Brianna. Thank you so much for coming on, and thanks for being a wonderful graduate of the Menstrual Coach Academy. And yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing more. I'll talk to you soon. And thank you everyone for listening. I hope you have a lovely rest of your week, and I'll talk to you in the next episode. Take good care. Thanks for joining me on the Menstrual Cycle Mastery podcast. If you'd like to begin this work with me, I run the Menstrual Mastery Collective, a monthly membership where you can dive deep into this work live alongside me and a supportive community. I'm also the founder of the Menstrual Coach Academy, a professional training space for trauma-informed coaching and facilitation. Head on over to the links in the bio to sign up for courses, programs, and grab any resources available. I'm so glad you're here.